The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Please welcome to the stage, Andy Zaltzman! Thank you. Hello, Buglers! Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre for this, The Bugle Live. Here we are in London's glamorous Leicester Square region. Today is... No wonder this country is... It is Wednesday the 14th of November. It is also another day ticked off in the slow, willful self-immolation of humanity. And it is also International Describe an Egg Day. Roundish. I am...
Andy.
Oh, very good. Good brand recognition. So who here has listened to The Bugle before? And who here has never listened to The Bugle?
Oh, I love these guys. These are always my favourite ones.
And, madam, do you mind if I ask why are you here? Oh, right, so this is a date, essentially. Yeah, a bugle date. That is tantamount to saying this relationship has gone as far as it can possibly go. Happy birthday. How old are you? 29. So, hang on. Let's just see if we can get the internet going here. So, born on the 31st of August, 1989. So, therefore, I think I'm right in saying conceived around about the start of December 1988. Let's just find out what was going on in the world then. So,
I always thought this was just bullshit. I can't believe you're actually on Wikipedia.
Right. It was a major cyclone in Bangladesh that left 5 million people homeless. The great American rock singer Roy Orbison died of a heart attack. Your parents are f***ing animals. This, by which I mean, welcome to the show. Happy birthday. This is The Bugle Live, doubling up as issue 4087 of the world's one remaining source of unashamed lies. All other news outlets pretend to be telling the truth. At least we have the decency and honesty to lie to your faces. And we are here in London on Wednesday the 14th of November, a historic anniversary, because this is the north anniversary of, insert whatever turns out to have happened with the Brexit cabinet shit today. When and if it ever becomes clear. And if you can do so without screaming, why, for f***'s sake, why? On this day in 1943, a young serviceman on the US Navy destroyer, USS William D. Porter, accidentally fired an armed torpedo at the battleship Iowa, which was not ideal, and it was even less not ideal when you factor in that on the Iowa were A, the President of the United States of America, B, Franklin D. Roosevelt. C, A and B are the same. D, Cordell Hull, the Secretary of State. And E, most of the leading figures in the US military. The Iowa managed to swerve and avoid the torpedo, and everyone lived happily ever after. But as mistakes at work go, that could have been the all-time champion forevermore. How was work today, dear? Oh, not bad. Oh, actually, there was one little incident. Oh, did you jam paper in the photocopier again, darling? I've warned you about that. No, I blew up the president by mistake and wiped out the entire command structure of the American military. Oh, no, they'll dock your Christmas bonus for that, love. It's right up there with the biggest ever workplace errors, including Captain Smith saying, I'll teach that big icy bastard a lesson or two with my unsinkable whoppership. Julius Caesar forgetting to put on his anti-stab jacket into work in 44 BC, and God saying, all done, on day 6 and knocking off for the weekend. As always, some sections of The Bugle are going straight.
In the beer!
Including this week. In 1927, in October of 1927, in fact, just 91 years and a month ago, the pro-celebrity inventor and pigeon-obsessive Nikola Tesla announced 6 new inventions, including the single-phase electric motor. I thought that might get a cheer. Clearly no fans of single-phase electric motors. You what, do you prefer the dual-phase electric motors? You f***ing weirdos. to mark this anniversary, we are announcing 6 new inventions that the... Yeah, that's better. that the Bugle is doing on behalf of Tesla, which he would probably have done today had he not failed at his attempts to invent the Nictez electronic personal home immortality cubicle with anti-clog popping technology, and instead died in 1943. So our 6 new inventions to mark the 91st and a bit anniversary of Tesla's 6 inventions. Number 1, the Groove, the ultimate in bedspreads, a disco-enabled duvet that wakes you up with a gradually loudening selection of bass-heavy, funky 70s classics from its inbuilt Bluetooth natural electronic albatross feather filling. The alternating pet... Why commit yourself to one type of pet? The Tesla Poocherbal Caterpin 3.2, patent pending, can be a dog when you want a companionable carnivore with house guarding skills, a cat for when you want something to drink some milk and then show you its arse, a terrapin just because, and a gerbil for those times you want to see something scuttling about in a wheel generating electricity for the Nictez time machine that you were given for Christmas in 17 years' time. Invention number 3, the wireless reverse pulse commitment halver. Have you said you'll do a series of things and now realising that you're overrunning and possibly condensing the rest of the show? The commitment halver, using electroplasmatic photonologic slicing technology, disrupts the space-time continuum to expunge 50% of what you've said you'll do from your to-do list, enabling you to just get on with whatever else you have on. Those are our 6 inventions.
Thank you.
Right. I think it was just about worth it, that joke. Anyway, so... Now, are you ready to meet our 2 Bugle co-hosts for today? Hey! Good, that could have been an extremely awkward pause that would have seemed a little bit racist. Because, firstly... From London, it's the man described by Inaccurate Comparison Monthly magazine as the thinking woman's Jane Austen. Nish Kumar!
Hello, Andrew. Hello, Christopher. Hello, Buglers. I'm glad that I'm here. There was an unfortunate admin snafu earlier in the day where I thought this was tomorrow. And the only reason I know it's today is that I got a text from Felicity Ward and also a tweet from someone who I think is here, at Liz Wilson NZ, who's tweeted me saying, looking forward to seeing you tonight. And I was like, that is very forward. Because I've got my diary free, and that is one of the most confident propositionings I've ever been on the receiving end of. Turns out that, for a lot of people that would have been difficult, Andy, to immediately adjust to having to do a satirical podcast in the evening. Not for me, because I'd spent the preceding 15 minutes before I received Felicity's text and Liz's tweet reading about Theresa May's Brexit deal whilst on the toilet, because that is the kind of guy I am. Also, and I'm now only ever going to read about Brexit on the toilet, because it turns out the toilet is the absolute perfect vantage point for reading about Brexit, because you're essentially... sat in the fug of a mess of your own making before flushing the whole thing down the drain.
Proper three-dimensional satire.
Three-dimensional fecal satire. I am, and hear this on every level, the shit John Oliver.
Who? Secondly, oh well, you've already heard who it's going to be on Nish's team. Why are you guys always ganging up on me? Please welcome the wonderful Felicity Ward!
Hello. I don't know how this is supposed to work because I can't see anyone. But then this way I've just got arrested on my tits For the people listening at home, I'm talking about the computer, and I don't think that clears anything up.
I mean, Felicity, that looks like an unwinnable war between laptop and physics that's going on there.
My nickname is Spiller, by the way, so I look forward to breaking the most expensive piece of equipment that I own in my house.
Right, it's time for Top Story this week. The aliens are coming!
Yay!
Oh. This is very exciting news. Well, in fact, they may have come and already left because Irish authorities have investigated a series of UFO sightings. Pilots of commercial airliners, many of them reported seeing the same thing. A pilot of a BA flight said it was moving so fast it came up on our left-hand side, then reared rapidly to the north. It was a very bright light that disappeared at very high speed. So, obviously, aliens. It could have been the future of the United Kingdom. It could have been the soul of the USA. It could have been the ghost of democracy future. Who knows? More likely, aliens taking one look at this planet and thinking... Not now. Not now. Nish, I mean, if you were an alien coming to this planet now, would you stick around? Or?
Well, I mean, absolutely not. But yeah. I mean, I think we should all be very worried about this because, as it is, we've got enough problems with Brexit dealing with the Irish border on land. Now we've got to worry about the Irish border with space. This alien visit could f*** the entire thing. It's just a shame, because before the aliens, it was all going so well. What really concerns me about this is that in the article, it says the spokesman added, it was unlikely to be aliens, fine, but the thing that really concerned me was that he added, from another planet. Now, does that mean that there are already aliens living here? If there are, I think we can all agree, Mitch McConnell and Nigel Farage, those two f***ing people are not human. I spent most of this afternoon staring at their faces after I've done my Brexit shit, and there is some kind of humanoid reptilian thing at work there.
And let's not forget Michael Gove. He can't clap, mate. That's a giveaway. That's classic alien giveaway. It's like, oh, clap. What are you doing with your hands?
He's like the guy in Men in Black whose skin suit doesn't fit on properly. I mean, that is a very specific... I love Men in Black. And the tragic thing about Men in Black is that if it were made now, the least realistic thing would be that a branch of the federal government had a positive attitude to immigrants and also had a high-ranking employee who is a black man.
Is anyone here an alien? You just never know these days, do you?
Your crowd work is as sharp as it's ever been, Salzman.
But if we're assuming that the aliens had come to Britain, it is, on the evidence of this week, no great surprise that they have, in layman's terms, right off again. Presumably they looked at Britain and thought, oh, we've read that this was once a great global imperial power, a nation with everything needed to be happy, successful and harmonious, and now appears to be tearing itself apart like a ham-loving pig. Now, as we speak...
truly one of the worst Jews of all time.
With its own movie, Hammerball. Thank you. Thank you. Only six people in Nish enjoying that, and I'm one of the six. Thank you. Thank you so much.
So as we speak, and we're recording this on Wednesday, Theresa May is locked in cabinet. Meeting. Sorry, I missed off the word meet. Locked in the cabinet. I assume she's just locked herself in a filing cabinet, to be honest. It's very exciting, isn't it? Waiting for the news of this deal to come out. It's like excitingly waiting to unwrap your presents at Christmas, wondering if Santa has bought you a box of steaming wolf shit or a flagon of still warm crocodile vomit or an exploding gerbil or a combination of all three or a commemorative Boris Johnson figurine that shits wolf shit
pukes crocodile chunder and then explodes in a flurry of sawdust and half-digested seeds. That's what we're looking at. Are you excited about the deal? Let's do a quick straw poll here of the audience for the Bugle podcast at the Leicester Square Theatre in London's Leicester Square district. Give me a cheer if you voted leave. And give me a cheer.
Honestly, you are more likely to have found an alien.
And give me a cheer if you voted remain. Who would have thought it? A podcast recording with a hosted by a lefty comedian best known for his only known for his podcast.
Yeah, and your guests are an Australian woman and the chocolate warrior.
Or as I say about my husband, a foreigner and someone that looks like a foreigner.
What? You're saying there's a difference? Why were we not told this before the referendum? One of the many things we were not told. Nish, have you got any updates for us from the...
Yeah, I do, actually. There is genuinely breaking news as we're on stage. Theresa May has shat herself to death. No.
This is the first time I've ever felt aligned with her. I really understand that. Yeah. I have irritable bowel syndrome, just if you wanted to know.
She's just given a statement as we're recording. She's just come out Downing Street and has said... She said that there was going to be a press conference at 5 p.m. and has emerged 2 hours later. And you're like, you're not Lauryn Hill, mate. No one is going to wait that long for your bullshit. But she has said that the cabinet has now agreed a draft Brexit withdrawal agreement, right? Fuck. So she's going to present it to Parliament tomorrow, but she said that they've agreed it. Now, just to be clear, right, even if they have agreed it, this is only half of what we need to do, right? The other things that we need to do are replace all of the EU laws that currently help govern our country and also make trading agreements with the EU. So we are not even halfway done, and it is almost... Also, they have had, as of Saturday, it'll be 876 days since the Brexit vote. I don't know what they've been f***ing doing that we are in a position where they are not finished. Just to give you some context for that, in 876 days, you could have completed the principal photography on the Lord of the Rings trilogy twice. I'm not saying that you'd have done the effects. That took another year per film in post-production. So you'd be left with a lot of footage of Andy Serkis in a green onesie and Sauron being played by a massive tennis ball. But you'd still have done principal photography in a time in which we have done the square root of f*** all.
Premier Foods have apparently started stockpiling provisions. They're the owners of Bisto, and they're stockpiling raw materials due to fears of what may happen after Brexit gridlock. So what we basically have here... is a symptomless blitz. which is genius in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Fucking poetry! Symptomless blitz! Yeah.
I think we all need to just start hunkering down under shelters and just...
I think they're very clever, because if Brexit's carried out, the one thing that will properly tip the UK over the edge... Sorry, mate. No, do you need...
I don't know what it is. Symptomless blitz.
Don't apologise. You're laughing, mate. It's beautiful.
He's like the Wordsworth of bullshit.
It's like the Wordsworth of words. I think it's very clever stockpiling Bisto, because if we all go insane once Brexit has actually happened, the one thing that's going to tip us over the edge is a f***ing gravy shortage. Like, if you can't have gravy after Brexit, what is the point of leaving the EU?
Also, you never stockpile things for a good reason.
No.
Like, no one's like, what are you up to? Oh, I'm stockpiling beers for my house party. Like, yeah. No one's going to tell you to stockpile season's greetings for Christmas.
Theresa May, more breaking news, has said that the withdrawal agreement is a decisive step enabling the UK to move on, very similar to the decisive step that Captain Oates took. As he went for his little wander.
I'm laughing at that, but I have no idea what that means. I just thought I'd do a shout out for any dumb fucks in the audience like me. Hey! Represent! Didn't go to uni. No surprises there.
Well, see, what you've got... See, the thing you've got here, Felicity, is that you are Australian.
I mean, you don't need to say that like a burn.
No, I'm not saying that like a burn.
I mean, Dosman, the tone on the word Australian suggested even if you had gone to university in Australia, you would have the
really
intelligence
count.
Equivalent.
Well, yeah. I think what we've learned is sort of difference in the way we look at our country's history, because Australia tends to only look back on the triumphs, whereas we in Britain, we like to remember our incompetences. And... Captain Oates was part of a Scots expedition to the Antarctic that got a creditable silver medal. To be fair, but unfortunately then indulged in a fatal lap of honour around Antarctica.
Well, look, I don't want to pay top trumps here, but one of our prime ministers drowned and we didn't look for him, so you can take trip to the Antarctic, good for you.
Shows what a winning culture you've got. He's obviously a loser if he can't swim back to shore.
Didn't Captain Oates make all the cereal that we're now stockpiling?
Chris has started bringing his own puns to Bugle Git. What the f***?
I was going to say, a lot of people groaned at that pun. I was like, it's going to be a long f***ing night for you. It's been a bad couple of another bad couple of weeks for Brexit news. There were some developments last week when the Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab revealed that he quotes hadn't quite fully understood the extent of the reliance on Dover by the United Kingdom. Now, as an island, you would have thought that'd be pretty fucking crucial information. Dominic Raab has been praised. Like, in The Guardian today, they reported that he's quite well thought of in Brussels, because they said he's been an assiduous Brexit secretary, noted in London and Brussels for taking a more active approach than the generally laissez-faire David Davis. Laissez-faire, of course, a common French expression meaning lazy right? But if I'm completely honest with you, I'm not surprised that Dominic Raab didn't know about the importance of Dover, because I have actually had a run-in with Dominic Raab when I met him on Question Time and he thought I was Gina Miller's brother. So Dominic Raab can't tell Asians apart. Why on earth would he... If he'd been invited round to my aunt's house last Sunday for Diwali, or as he calls it, Ramadan, there would have been... It would have been all sorts of confusion. He'd been walking up to every single person saying, "Nice to meet you, Nish," before eventually exclaiming, "Well, I give up. This is basically like trying to find a brown needle in a chocolate haystack."
Can we just go back for a second? People have been watching a door for 2 hours tonight. And I just don't think we touched on that enough. People have watched footage of a door, which is still less wooden than watching Theresa May speak. What do you think took her so long? You reckon she just couldn't remember the moves to Macarena? And she's like, I'm going to have to polish this turd somehow. Or maybe just finally her whole teeth fell out. You know how she looks like she's just trying to keep them in? Like she's got two loose dentures at all times. And she's just trying to style it out. Like, I don't know if you know the show Mr. Ed, but it was an American show. And I'm not comparing her to a horse at all. I know that's very sexist. But what they used to do is they used to give him molasses or peanut butter. They used to give it to chimpanzees too. So their mouths would move in Hollywood films. So then they could voice over. What if they've just given Teresa a whole bunch of peanut butter and she's trying to keep the dentures in while someone's throwing their voice from another room? Am I wrong?
There's always a country that is even more f***ed than us. So let's
USA,
turn on...
USA! USA! USA!
USA! Nish, you're our official Donald Trump correspondent.
Yep. That's why I've aged 50 years in the last 2 years. Yep, that's right. The man who puts the white nationalist into the phrase, "The President of America is a white nationalist." Has had a very, very tricky couple of weeks. It started badly for tax avoidance's man of the century when he saw the Republican Party lose their majority in Congress. Then he gave a press conference which devolved into a shouting match, and then he missed a Remembrance Day event in France due to it raining. Now, that sounds really shocking, but what you have to understand is Donald Trump is a gremlin. You don't get him wet, you don't feed him after dark, and you don't expose him to bright lights. Imagine how disrespectful it would have been if he'd bitten Emmanuel Macron.
I think people would have just thought, yeah, that stacks up.
And then you'd have a parade of people on television being like, well, maybe this is a refreshing way of approaching politics. Just biting other world leaders.
Just let them fight it out,
just
mate.
Just let them fight
They'll
it out.
They'll get tired and come to a policy soon. Trump was very adamant in the lead up to the midterms about the caravan of migrants. That was the big sort of fear phrase that he used. And apparently they've disappeared now. It's all fine. But I was just thinking about it. The caravan really is the least respected form of transportation, isn't it? It's like there's a lot of discrimination against the caravan. Like the penny farthing of migrants doesn't carry the same threat. I understand. And I just don't know what's so terrifying about a portable house. I don't know if it's the difficulty in reverse parking, or I just is it the freedom, ironically? I don't know. It's like a cordless vacuum cleaner. I could clean anywhere. Anyway, I was just thinking about it, and many of the caravan of migrants, which sounds like a very real Ewok movie, they made the journey on foot from Honduras, which is nearly 3,000 miles away, and I just the whole time I was just thinking, I hope at least one of them has a Fitbit. You know, like, can you imagine? You'd be so smug. You're like, yeah, I've done 9 million steps this week, actually.
And what is puzzling about this, though, was that there appeared to be no contingency plan for if it rained.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That is the correct response.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump is essentially a British train. Like, there's absolutely no way of making him function if the weather does anything.
Well, because you'd think they always have a contingency plan. This is what all previous people from the White House said. There's always a contingency plan, which makes me think they had a contingency plan and they decided that would be worse, which makes me think the contingency plan was for Donald Trump to parade around a World War I cemetery urinating on soldiers' graves.
Celebrating, I think, is the verb you're looking for.
Sarah Saunders would have come out and fronted up to the world's press to explain that he was merely fertilising the flowers on those graves. And all that the president's wee-wee is magic. So,
Well, there was zero visibility and his chopper couldn't fly, and then the motorcade would have added to the traffic, and then apparently there was an Uber price surge. So, like, I get it. And as someone whose hair does respond badly to rain as well, Andy, you will have this, I can see. I've got the same hair as Andy. I've just got some in the middle. I understand not wanting to go out into the rain, but there is a product that I've been using for a couple of years called an umbrella, and it's really quite effective. I don't know if you saw the two things. One, obviously, Donald Trump went onto Twitter, and he does these really long Twitter threads that go for like 5 or 6. And every time I'm on there, I'm like, why doesn't he just get a WordPress account? Like, start a blog, mate. It's fine. And he went on this big rant, God bless you. He went on this big rant. I'm very courteous, even in the middle of a rant.
It won't happen.
God won't bless him? Or
God's off duty. Well, it's a lovely gesture, but anyway, carry on.
So British. This is futile.
Here he comes, the worst Jew of all time.
Surely that was Jesus. I mean, just in terms of... if you just measure it purely... in terms of adverse effect on market share, Jesus is going to be very, very hard to beat. I'm not saying he was a bad man. I'm saying he was, historically, a bad Jew.
Not good for the brand.
No, exactly not. What was odd that with Trump said that he didn't want to disrupt traffic in Paris? When you think of all the things he has disrupted, for example, the entirety of international politics and the US legal system, but traffic, no, traffic, absolutely, absolutely not.
He tweeted, make France great again, which yes. is not, you know how they say make America great again and they shorten it to MAGA? MFGA is just not as catchy and it just sounds like a drunken swear word. I go, motherfucker.
So yeah, he tweeted, "Make France great again," or as it would be translated into French,
"Ah oui, bien sûr, nous peut-être voudrons encore une fois transformer la belle France jusque de donc lorsqu'on fleut une nation qui se rencontre ainsi avec la salade niçoise et du foie gras très, 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 vraiment magnifique de bœuf."
Never. Not the most concise of languages, to be fair.
You still sounded like a French Richie Beno. Every impression you do has got a little bit of Richie Beno, and I don't mind it.
The best kind of Richie Beno.
I understand that this is not the big Trump news of this week or of any time, but it was big news in my life for reasons that will become quite quickly apparent. Yesterday, Donald Trump made 3 attempts to tweet Happy Diwali. Now, first of all, week late, but it's fine. It's absolutely fine. The reason he kept having to make attempts is he kept on forgetting to include Hindus in the list of religions that celebrate Diwali, which is quite surprising given that it is a Hindu festival. And he kept on saying, tweeting Jains, who do celebrate, Jains, Buddhists and Sikhs, Happy Diwali, but he forgot Hindus, who were the sort of majority people who, and a lot of Indian friends of mine were very upset about this. I'm actually quite relieved, because I would rather Hindus were not on his radar, given how much he loves hamburgers. He would probably consider our attitude to beef an act of holy war. Like, I'm perfectly happy for him to think that we're just weird Muslims.
I mean, surely you want to be left off any list that Donald Trump is making.
Just some breaking news on Trump. The UN have just launched a new decoy country to take Trump's attention away from real places. The new decoy country, Muslimistan, will be inflated and floated out across the Pacific to provide a new focus for global politics. Have you any more on Trump, or should we bury that twitching horse?
We have milked that pumpkin. Well, that's what we do in our house. How do you get the juice out of the pumpkin?
Feels like that's White House slang at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
For getting him to give a statement. Has anyone milked the pumpkin?
Nah, he's coming up seeds, mate. He's just coming up seeds.
That's going to edit beautifully. Nish, you're our world democracy correspondent.
I've got a broad brief in the Bugle. The Iraqi Prime Minister, Adel Abdel Mahdi, has taken a slightly unorthodox approach to staffing his new government, given that he allowed people to just apply online. So just anyone... He's found 5 people from purely online applications. So it seems like the Iraqi government is now being constructed on monster.com. Like... maybe this is the future for democracy. We already know it wouldn't work in the case of this country, because if we used any sort of social media, because he used Facebook to make the announcement, if we used any sort of social media, our entire cabinet would be made up of men called Sergey who work in bot farms in St. Petersburg.
But it wouldn't, Nish. It would be made up of men called Minister McMinisterface. We can't be trusted. We cannot be trusted.
So there's 14 cabinet members and they're going to be chosen out of the 15,000 applicants, which is still better odds than me getting a f***ing Spice Girls ticket this week. Yeah, I heard someone clapping. It was tough, wasn't it? Did you get one?
No.
It's tough, isn't it? It is shit, man.
I don't think either of you f***ing people should have been buying tickets to the Spice Girls, given that we now know they're alarmingly right wing. They come out in favour of Theresa May and Brexit, and as I've consistently maintained, they're the most racist group of all time because they had one black member and they called her scary. I've been very clear, very, very clear that the Spice Girls are a right wing racist institution.
That may be so, but their songs are so catchy. I mean, they've got outfits, they've got dance moves. Come on, Nish, get on board. If you die, you'll die dancing.
Zigga Zigga was actually an SS catchphrase.
It's the sound of you falling off somewhere. Zigga Zigga! I can you imagine, what makes me really happy about this is just how many prank CVs were sent in. God. Just so many, just the like, oh, this guy's studied at the School of University. He's got a PhD in your mum. Delicious.
What was his PhD in?
Your mum.
It's pronounced Yemen.
Oh, sorry. For the people who don't like puns, you can stick that in your jacksy.
Well, I think we have a new catchphrase for the show, Felicity. Thank you very much.
Stick that in your jacksy.
In other global democracy news, exciting times for Ethiopian politics, which is not a topic we've covered a huge amount.
No, we've not done a huge amount of Ethiopian politics.
But the anticipation in the room is bubbling at fever pitch.
They had their first female president, the Prime Minister recently appointed a cabinet with half the post taken up by women. So, Felicity, on behalf of your gender, don't f*** it up. Yeah.
But this is all we want. We just want an equal opportunity to fail at a government level like men have been able to do, you know? That's what we want.
Why can't
I eat shit in a global level, you know?
But I'm just not sure women have the right capabilities to be as dysfunctionally incompetent as men.
Andy, give them a chance, Andy. Give them a f***ing chance,
thank
mate.
You,
I know it's an old-fashioned view, but that's just the way I see it.
Oh, what I really liked is that she came out and she said, her name's Saleh Work-Zoude, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, and she said she's very focused on gender equality and then said to the MPs that if they thought that she was talking too much about women, that she'd only just begun. And then she just let off an air horn and pointed to a vagina and said, tell it to the judge. And I...
Family show. What is it with Australian women on this podcast? Honestly.
It's like we should take an opportunity where we can get it to just celebrate a genuinely good piece of news. Like
yeah.
That's really it. We've been so starved of everything that we're like, now we're just anything. Oh, great, good. Ethiopia's elected female leader. Oh, good for that. That's great. Good for them. Good for Ethiopia. I'm really looking forward to things for perhaps obvious reasons. I'm really looking forward for everything to be upended and in 50 years' time for the nations of Africa to invade Britain to bring democracy, stability and harmony. That is what I'm waiting for. For a coalition of all the African nations and India to finally take back control.
What if all the colonies just banded together?
That would be so
good. And then just turn back to the UK and go, we've got a f***ing bone to pick with you, mate.
I've got to be honest with you. I know I was born here and I'm British. I'll turn on you white c***s in a second.
That is the BBC's Nish Kumar. And
non-partisan.
Nish, I'm just written down in a newspaper with no context.
I just live tweeted that actually. Oh, I will turn on you. In a second.
I believe the phrase was white.
Sorry, mate. That was rude of me.
Oh, I regret nothing.
Right, we're going to have a quick audience Q&A now. Let's try and avoid historical figures you'd like to kill.
Who would you kill?
Here comes Chris with the mic. Do you have any questions for the panel today? I can tell you that at the moment, Nish has 4 points and Felicity has 5 points.
Oh, here we go. How are you guys?
Good, mate. How are you?
Oh, yeah, we're good.
Was
great
that your question?
Was
that
it, mate?
Was that it?
Next question.
That was it, yeah.
Oh, was that really it?
That was it.
Oh, was that genuinely it?
That was it.
The best.
Well, I think we need to answer
it. That is a spectacular piece of... Olympic level trolling of Chris from that man.
I mean, sometimes it's really hard to know what you're going to keep in the show and what you're going to cut.
But I mean, maybe.
Excuse me.
For the listeners at home, Chris had to walk about 17 miles to get to that show.
Excuse me.
Anyway,
bit of a concerning seating position. Chris is currently sat next to my parents.
I'm in the family zone right now.
Yeah. Speaking of strong women looking at Nish disappointingly.
I'm currently sat in the row with my parents, Nish's parents, and sandwiched between them is Alice Fraser.
How you doing?
It's nice that we have a family box. It makes Bugle Live recordings like Wimbledon.
Was that your question? That's worse than the guy at the back.
I cannot believe Chris saw Alice's hand go up and didn't anticipate exactly what was about to happen.
We finish with news from a disappointing night for the Impressionists. At Sotheby's, they had an auction, Impressionism versus Modern Artists, another riveting late second millennium derby.
If you don't know what's coming, you're in for a very, very tricky 3 to 67 minutes.
Saw some of the top Impressionists like Edgar Degas and Edouard Manet fail to hit top form and end up sulking and unsold on the bench at the end of the auction. And the Surrealist manager, Giuseppe Lipsitchi, did not spare his star players from criticism. He said, Edgar and Edouard are big stars, but they've got to f***ing produce on the biggest stage. When the likes of René Magritte are shifting Surrealist shit for 27 mil, you've got to respond with something a bit more inventive than another f***ing duck pond. So take that, Monet. Now, but actually, you wouldn't believe this, but I've actually got a...
You wouldn't.
I've got a friend who's a modern artist. He's obsessed with it. And his work spans many of the leading genres of modern art from the late 19th century onwards. And once he was actually doing a painting of roosting birds in a kind of Vincent van Gogh style. And he asked me if he could help him out by sourcing, buying, and then sending him some of the things that the birds roosted in, and specifically of German birds from the 19th century. He wanted me to post him Prussian nests. Post him Prussian nests? Oh. Anyway, he went to see...
The bow is so long. It's so long.
He went to see an exhibition of Picasso and George Braque paintings. He told me he was so excited. He camped outside the gallery for 3 days to make sure he got in. He was South African, my friend. He said, Andy, it's the longest I've ever waited in line for anything. I set a new personal cubist. Cubist.
Can I just point out, I know for a fact you have family from South Africa, and that accent was worse than Leonardo DiCaprio's in Blood Diamonds.
Anyway, he started wearing fake T-shirts, or as he called them, fauvists. he opened a new gallery. I said, didn't many people come in? He said, there weren't many locals, but a few tourists. And he got parasites in his hair from all the strain. He treated it by buying a very expensive hat. I said, well how's that going to get rid of them? And he said, well, it's 99% psychological. You have to make them so overwhelmed by what an amazingly stylish person you are that they leave your head. You've got to impressionitz. He wrote this huge, great essay ranting about how six-packs are overrated. He called it his abstract. Anyway, I told him that his favourite half of an all-Jewish singer-songwriter duo had met a revolutionary 19th-century battlefield nurse. He said, what, you're saying Garfunkel met Nightingale? I said, yeah, well, Art Nouveau. Anyway, he told him that...
This run
is the end of art.
I told him... he told me that next year, 10 months from now, two leading Tories are going to have an old-fashioned pistol fight to the death at dawn, and it's going to be broadcast on a radio station specialising in low-quality pop music. I said, let me make a note of that, using abbreviation to save time. Now, where are we now? November. OK. Conceptual heart. Conceptual art? Concept... I mean... OK, fair point.
You take their feelings on board.
He was obsessed with creatures with no legs. He had loads in his collection, some aquatic, some reptilian, but he got confused about which was which. I can't tell them apart, Andy. I know some are snakes. I'll write those ones down. And I'll write down the ones that I know for definite are fish. Good idea, I said. Make a surrealist. Surrealist.
Oh!
Ta-da!
Got it.
I tested many of these on my dog and my wife. I didn't get any laughs from the missus, but I got a few bow wows. Bow wows. Actually, anyway, to finish, my friend, he gave up art, went into acting. He got cast on an advert for Rice Krispies. He rang me up very excited, said, I didn't get the role of Snap. They passed me over for Crackle, but don't tell me, I said, they gave you the pop part. Pop part. And don't forget, Friday, the 16th of November, is the International Day for Tolerance. all that is left now, apart from you, for you to buy worthless merchandise on the way out, is to show your appreciation for the two wonderful Bugle co-hosts tonight, Felicity Ward, Nish the Hammer Kumar, Chris the Producer. I've been Andy Zoltzman. Thanks to the Leicester Square Theatre. Goodbye.